Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Joining me right now to give us the Israel report is Leza Berman. He's a diplomatic reporter from the Times of Israel. And Leza, welcome back and thank you so much for standing in for Rolene Marks. How are you?
Good, how are you?
Very good, thank you. Good to be speaking to you. Can we go, look, we have a big story that we have been reporting on extensively is this killing of the Al Jazeera journalist in Jenin. One thing that was coming out yesterday was there was lots of rumor and there were lots of things that were coming out as fact. One of the things that was said was that she had already been buried. Meantime, it turns out that she hadn't been buried. She was only buried today, correct?
No, the funeral procession began today in Ramallah.
Yes.
She is expected to be buried tomorrow in a ceremony in East Jerusalem. So she has not yet been buried. There's this very extended procession which began today at the presidential compound in Ramallah, but tomorrow she is expected to be buried.
Okay. And are her family based in Israel?
She has family, she's originally from Bethlehem, but she also has a family in the United States, in New Jersey, and that's how she got her U.S. citizenship. And the fact that she's a U.S. citizen obviously makes this even more sensitive, more complicated.
Right.
I don't know about her direct family. I don't know about that.
Okay. All right. So what do we know so far?
Well, we know kind of what we expected, that this has not turned into a fact-based discussion, but immediately it turned into the narratives. And this brings some of us who have been following this for a while back to the beginning of the Second Intifada. When I was much younger, but some of my older colleagues remember the Mohammed Al-Dura case,
yes,
in which a young Palestinian boy was killed in the Gaza Strip, and that became a rallying cry for the Palestinians, for violence against Israel, and it remains questioned today what exactly happened there. So it seems like this is also turning into that type of thing. You had the Israelis who initially were basically blaming Palestinian gunfire in Jenin, and they seem to have walked that back. And now the Israelis are basically saying, we don't know anything until there's a full investigation, and calling on the Palestinian Authority to cooperate. Today, the Palestinians under Mahmoud Abbas have rejected any offers for cooperation. And they very outrightly and very directly blame Israeli soldiers for killing Shireen Abu Akleh.
Why would they not be willing to cooperate?
So those who are, in the Israeli government, and those who tend not to trust the Palestinian Authority would say they have something to hide, that the only way to find out who is responsible is to do a proper autopsy and to take a look at the bullet. Now, the bullet is a 5.56 caliber bullet, which doesn't help anybody because that is what the Israelis use on their M16s, their M4s, also their Tavor rifles. But since a lot of Palestinian weaponry has been stolen from Israeli soldiers and also has been purchased in other ways, they also a lot of times will use the same caliber. However, if Israel is able to get the actual bullet, they can match it up to the soldiers' guns and have a much better idea of where that came from. On the other hand, the Palestinians will say that they can do their own investigation, or they'll let international organizations, third parties, do the investigation as well. So, it depends, again, what you believe initially, that really shapes the narrative around this.
How do you think that it would be received if a third party had to do the investigation? If the Palestinians agreed to it, do you think Israel would agree to it? That a third party do the investigation?
Sure. So it's a somewhat of a trampling on Israel's sovereignty and hinting that Israel is not entirely reliable. But I think they would be open to a U.S.-led investigation. Certainly the relations with the U.S. are obviously quite robust. And the fact that she was an Israeli citizen, an American citizen, makes it hard for Israel to say no. So I think that might be a possible option if both sides agree to adhere to the findings of that investigation. If it goes to a third party, like an international organization, obviously not Amnesty International, but even the UN, might be much harder pill for Israel to swallow, and likely would not be something that the Bennett government would agree to.
Yeah. Look, I mean, it makes sense what you say. I mean, if the United States had to do the investigation, I think that's less of a bitter pull for Israel to swallow. I think that the Palestinian Authority would probably agree to that. And they have a legitimate interest in being part of the investigation, no?
We might see them as having an interest, but it certainly serves their interest as well to be able to make Israel look bad and to blame Israel. And if they have information that it's not so clear who did this, or it might have been Palestinian gunfire, it's that would be certainly something that they would want to prevent happening, that investigation. So again, it doesn't help anyone. It's people that really want the truth certainly need to see proper investigation. I think no one thinks that the Palestinian Authority is going to carry out such a thing. The Palestinians don't think that Israel can. So it might indeed fall upon the United States. And it might be that it takes United States pressure on the Palestinians to make this happen.
Yeah, very interesting also about, I think it was Mahmoud Abbas. Was it Mahmoud Abbas who said that it needs to go to the International Criminal Court?
Yes. So initially it was another PA official, but today at the at that beginning of that funeral procession, Abbas directly called for the ICC to get involved. As we know that the ICC has already started probing Israel for human rights violations in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. So this is obviously not a body that Israel trusts. It's not a body that Israel says has any jurisdiction in Israel. And Israel is not a signatory to the necessary protocol. So it's not something that would actually happen. But obviously the Palestinians, I think rightfully so, see it as a body that is positively disposed toward the Palestinian position, is not especially friendly to Israel. So it's not surprising that he made that vow, that he vowed to take the case to the ICC in The Hague.
When did the Palestinians become, when did they become signatories to the International Criminal Court?
That is a good question. So it's called the Rome Statute, and it was drafted originally. It entered into force in 2002. It was the late 90s where it was drafted. I don't know when the Palestinians actually became a party to it. That is a good question. But it is the state of Palestine which has some powers in international bodies. But I'm not sure when they actually became a party to it.
Yeah, that's interesting. Maybe. I don't know, maybe I'm just finding this interesting, but maybe it's not so interesting for everybody else. Laser, can we talk about this coalition? Israel's government, I'm not sure how many people thought that it was going to survive. Do you think it's going to survive?
No, it is surviving some very difficult times. Certainly this last month of Ramadan was very challenging for it, with the violence on the Temple Mount and elsewhere. And that started to really widen some cracks in the coalition. You had the Islamist Ram Party, which is that independent Arab party that makes this coalition possible. They freeze their participation in the coalition for 3 weeks. And there were expectations this week that they would support a no confidence bill, which would have probably started the process toward either changing the government or a new election. It has proven somewhat resilient, though, right? So it has made it through some very difficult times. It seems like it's in the interest of all parties to keep this thing going. It's in the interest of even the right-wing parties because they're anti-Netanyahu. It's not that they're pro-Bennett. There's not really many pro-Bennett folks in the Knesset at all. But the fact that Netanyahu is right there in the wings, I think, is keeping this thing together. It's keeping U.S. pressure off of this government as well. And for the Ram Party, if they go back to the opposition, it would be an admission of failure. So they're really dedicated to this idea that they can bring results to Arab Israelis, to Bedouins in the south, and to some changes on the Temple Mount. And they really have to see some results. And I think the coalition understands this, and they are talking to the Ram Party about how to actually give them some deliverables. The polling right now for the Ram Party is terrible. If there was elections this week or in the near future, they won't even get back into the Knesset. So there really has to be some concessions or some progress on Ram's priorities, and that will obviously cause some stress on the right wing of this coalition. So again, it has proven surprisingly durable, but there are so many fissures between right and left, you know, on religious affairs and a number of affairs. And of course, it only takes one more member to bolt the coalition, as Idit Sliman did from Bennett's party, to really start this death spiral. So it's on the brink, but it is holding on.
Well, you know what? Either way, I think that a change of leadership is good. No? Isn't it? Is it not good? Because maybe there's a fresh approach, and there's a hope that there can actually be a partner for peace.
That's certainly what proponents of this coalition and the coalition itself says. You know, there's plenty of people that even voted for Bibi several times. And then, you know, after he's in office for a decade, you understand that there are some things that he either can't solve or is not about to solve.
Yeah.
On the other hand, the pro-Bibi folks will say, you know, this is the most experienced leader. He's a heavyweight in a very dangerous region and a very dangerous world. And this coalition is showing that it is not up to it. That's, again, that's not me saying it. That's what opponents of the coalition will say. They've certainly shaken things up. I think one of the biggest potentials here is for a new narrative, a new path toward cooperation within Israel between Arabs and Jews. And that's what the Ram Party represents. But again, they're on the brink of leaving the coalition. They've decided they're going to stay, but they need to be given some of their demands. So it's hard to say. And again, it matters what your priorities are. There certainly was a lot of hope, but they haven't yet to deliver some of the major priorities. There hasn't been any new signatories on the Abraham Accords. They have not gone back to the Association Council with the EU. So there are some big priorities that have yet to come in this first year.
Laizer Berman, as always, I have really enjoyed hearing what you have to say, your analysis. You're very straight talking, and I really do enjoy speaking to you. So I wish you a Shabbat Shalom, and I hope that it's not too long until we speak again. Thank
Shabbat
you so
Shalom.
Much.
I look forward to it.
God bless.
Thank you.
Take care, Laizer. That's Laizer Berman. He's a diplomatic reporter for The Times of Israel.